Welcome to the Natural Running Network. My name is Richard Diaz, and what I hope to do is introduce you to some amazing athletes and luminaries from the sports science community, and what has come to be expected, I'll provide some highly opinionated rants on all aspects of endurance sports and my current favorite, obstacle course racing. But before I get started, I want to give a shout out to Human Octane. If you're the kind of person who pushes the limit, then you've got to check out Human Octane Apparel. Training and racing apparel designed by OCR athletes, and these guys just get it. Everything they make dries lightning fast, has zippered pockets, is abrasion resistant in high contact areas without bulky padding. I've gotten to know these guys, and trust me, they're going to out-innovate the competition when it comes to OCR gear. Check them out at humanoctane.com. Now sit tight, grab a cup of coffee, and let's do this. All right, folks, here we go. I am back again, and guess what? New things happening. I've got Sean Kahn. He's like taking over wing position today. And he brought to the table an amazing interview, Heather Golnick. So, Sean, say hello to everybody.
Hey, everybody. Rich, how are you doing?
You know what? If I was better, I'd have to be twins. And we have Heather. Hey, Heather. So, Heather, Sean got some questions. I'm going to let him roll it out, and then we're going to go from there.
Sounds great.
All right, let's do it. So, for those that don't know, Heather Golnick is one of the most accomplished endurance athletes out there. She grew up being active in gymnastics, competing in college before getting the triathlon bug shortly thereafter. Finishing in the top of her age group, fielder to turn professional in 2002, focusing on the Ironman distance. She's won over 200 multi-sport events, and is a five-time pro Ironman champion and has won everything from a 5K to an Ironman. She got into the OCR bug in January 2016, trying to race in California, and now has not left the Masters podium. Heather, say hello to the audience.
Hi, everyone.
Wow, that was great. That's quite an intro.
Thanks for that nice intro, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say I practiced 30 times, but, you know.
It sounded a little scripted. You know, you need to take a little tequila with that conversation, you know, just kind of loosen that thing up, get a little mojo working, right?
That's a good start to a Monday, you're right.
Yep.
Well, and does everyone know what an Ironman is? Because sometimes I have people ask me, they still don't know what an Ironman is.
Well, I know what it is.
I think the audience could use an explanation.
So an Ironman is a 2.4-mile swim followed by a 112-mile bike and finished off with a marathon. And, yes, you do that all in one day as fast as you can. And I loved competing in Ironmans. It was definitely my thing. I liked it more than the shorter triathlon. I thrived on being out there all day long and definitely gained a lot of just mental tenacity from doing Ironman. I've done 36 Ironmans.
Wow.
That's a lot. Heather, I don't know how much you know about me, the good and the bad, but I came up in triathlon. And I
did know that.
I'm like way old school triathlon. And I did my first half Ironman in 1981. So I spent years, I produced the events, I produced the first pro race for CBS Sports in 84 on the island of Kauai. And so I'm like a dinosaur in triathlon. One of the reasons why I was ready to jump on getting you on is because I also know you coach. And having come from triathlon to also coaching OCR athletes is interesting to me because it's very much kind of like what I've done. You feeling me?
I am feeling you. And there's so many similarities, even though there's so many differences from triathlon to OCR. And one amazing thing is, so I have a triathlon team and have been coaching triathletes for 20 some years. And it's so fun getting them into OCR and just seeing their strengths change. And, you know, these are people that are working out, you know, 2 to 5 hours a day, people that are, you know, not your weekend warriors, but they're like very accomplished triathletes. And they hop into OCR just like me. It was like, oh my gosh, yeah, I guess you don't use your grip strength in triathlon.
No.
And just how different your body changes. And, you know, carrying buckets up hills, you're just using your hamstrings and your glutes in such a different way that it makes you such a stronger runner. And so I love the crossover between the sports.
Well, I got to tell you, I think that from a coaching perspective, it's a frustrating affair because, as you know, coming from where you come from, how structured triathlon training is. And so let me just kind of be devil's advocate here for a second. I sit out here and let's assume that I call you up and say, Heather, I've heard so much about you and I really would love to be coached by you. I'm an OCR athlete. I'm coming up and I'm trying to make things happen. I want to get on the podium. And so your first question is, okay, great. So what's your first event? Well, I'm racing twice this week, and then I've got 4 more races in the month, and I got 17 more races for the season. And you're like, you know, where do you grab the merry-go-round and stop it so that you can kind of get your hands on it and try to work it out? Have you run into that frustration?
Not that particular one, but I can totally see that. You know, and the athletes' mindsets are so different. Triathletes are very structured. They're very, you know, what's my power? What's my distance per mile? And then you go do an OCR and your, you know, mile pace is very much thrown off because there was 4 obstacles in that mile. And but I think it's good. Like for me, the constant, you know, what's your swim pace? What's your, you know, 20-minute time trial time? What's your, and all those details kind of got a little bit left to the wayside when I started doing OCR because they weren't as important, but then other things became more important as far as, you know, your strength and your grip strength and other things that I think athletes can focus on. That typically from a triathlete to an OCR athlete, they need to focus on it because it's their weakest. You know, most triathletes aren't super strong or their grip strength's not super strong. And so when you can focus on that weakness and kind of let the other things, you know, most triathletes have very good endurance. And so they don't need to work on that. They focus on their weaknesses.
Well, yeah, but that would be a triathlete coming into OCR. I'm suggesting as a triathlon coach and dealing with someone that is kind of novice in OCR and they just, that's their whole thing, which is the case mostly with OCR athletes, I find, is that they don't really come from other sports. They might have a history of running, maybe rock climbing or something like that, but I have not run into a lot of triathletes that have shifted. I don't know whether you find that to be different or not, but I find that most of the OCR athletes I run into, they just got such a heavy bug about racing OCR that they're just smitten by it. And, you know, they're like ready to mortgage the house to make sure they have enough money to finish the season, right?
Yeah, they are an interesting bunch. And that's what I love about it, though, is just the passion for OCR racing. And I've been fortunate. I've had a lot of triathletes come to me that are making that transition to OCR, where maybe you haven't seen that as much just because people know that that's what I just did. My athletes that have come to me from, you know, they're CrossFitters and they come and they want to do OCR. Those athletes are completely different. Like, you have to really work on their running form and their running cadence. And those athletes, you have different weaknesses. They may be super strong. You have no problem if there was a triple sandbag carry. But it's that running in between and being able to transfer from obstacle to running, from obstacle to running, that those athletes seem to have a little bit of a weakness at. And so each athlete's so different, where they come from, what their background is, what their strengths are, what their weaknesses are. And I really do a good inventory of you know, what their strengths and weaknesses are, even if it's somebody that I'm coaching online, giving them simple tasks. I remember when I first came into OCR and someone said, you know, do this task where you do the 10-second hang, pull up, 10-second hang, pull up. And I'm like, oh, that sounds really easy. And I think I made it like two. Yeah. And so I was like, okay, very big eye-opener, you know, I'm not strong. Whereas a triathlete that did multiple Ironmans, I think I thought I was strong. And so giving athletes like tests to find out really where they're at, no matter where they're coming from, if they're coming from triathlon or they have done some OCR or they're coming from CrossFit or they're coming from the couch. And I think that's why it's so fun, is because you have athletes coming from all different sports and a lot of athletes coming kind of, you know, from the couch.
Or the bar.
Which is really, or the bar. they got their drinking arms pretty strong. So.
John, where did you come from as an athlete? Did you run in school?
No, I came from the bar, just like you were saying, Richard, in terms of my university days. And I ended up actually coming from mixed martial arts. I got quite out of shape and got into mixed martial arts, really fell in love with the conditioning aspect. And then lo and behold, I'm goal setting for 2017 or 2016. And I see Spartan Race and I'm like, what is that? And just go into the mindset of, oh, the trifecta sounds good. But I haven't run a mile in God knows how long. So yeah, I kind of fall into that, but I can tell you that, the periodization and everything like that, it's a challenge, but it's an exciting challenge.
Yeah. Heather, who was your competition in triathlon, Ironman distance?
I don't know if you'd even recognize some of the names, Desiree Ficker.
Sure.
And Akili Jones.
Yep.
And I'm really aging myself because people remember these athletes from years and years and years ago.
I know Akili. Yep. As a matter of fact, she's married to an old friend of mine. Who came second behind you at Ironman?
You know, it was interesting because as I was kind of coming out of the sport, a lot of new women were coming in that are just kind of leaving the sport now. You know, I remember doing a couple races and there'd be someone and be like, you know, who is this girl? And now she's gone on to win, you know, several Ironmans. And it's interesting how pretty much every 5-6 years, you know, it changes, especially, you know, for the American women. And so it's starting to change even again with, you know, who's coming out on top for races that since I've retired, I've been retired from triathlon, gosh, almost eight years from racing professionally.
Wow.
Yeah, I come back from Paula Newby Frazier, you know, way back, way, way back. I did a show with Chris McCormick, I think a couple of years ago. Chris was quite the athlete, and but anyway, I've been around it a long time, just a long, long time. Well, I'm back in the day when Scott Tinley, Dave Scott, Mark Allen, all those guys were kind of, you know, running things, so to speak. That's before your time.
Yeah, they were all kind of ending their era when I came into the sport.
I did an interview with Scott Tinley, I think about a year or so ago, and he's kind of taken an interesting turn. Nice guy. So you left Ironman, you left triathlon, and went into OCR. What was your mindset?
I was just doing OCR to try it. I mean, I was so, like, had really no clue. I was standing there at the first race, totally excited, talking to a stranger. And I'm like, you know, what time are you going? And I said, oh, I signed up at 7:45. He's like, oh, you signed up in the elite wave? And then my husband and I are talking and the guy's still standing in, like, you know, earshot distance. And I was looking at this course and it was orange. And I'm like, yeah, that doesn't look too bad. The wall looks small, the cargo net. And he's like, that's kids' course. So I really had no idea. I mean, looking at the kids course, I thought I can do this really well. So needless to say, those first few races, I did a lot of burpees. My husband laughed because I totally could not throw. Like, I'd be aiming toward the hay and it would go 20 feet to the right. He's like, you throw like a girl. And I'm like, well, I've never played any ball sports. Like, could not throw. didn't have any grip strength, couldn't do the hard rigs, you know, just really was not good. And that right there, I was like, this is new. This is exciting. This is something that I can train for. So it was very motivating to have something that I wasn't good at that I wanted to be good at. And so I just started, you know, doing all kinds of grip strength exercises. I think I could do maybe 2 fingertip push-ups before I would collapse, where now I can do 20. And I'm like, yeah, my fingers are getting stronger. And, you know, we have a ranch and we built almost all of the obstacles this year when I got to the first race and saw the Olympus. And I'm like, I don't know how to do this. We built it. You know, it's bigger and longer than the one in the race. And so I jumped in 110%.
Wow. And getting into the pro circuit, what was your mindset? I mean, did you just kind of like, it just started to evolve and you thought, wow, this is kind of cool. And you start, assuming that, you know, like you're used to, you end up picking up some sponsors here and there. Did it work out like that for you?
Yeah, I was really, really fortunate to know how to communicate with potential sponsors and kind of work that end of it. And so once I realized it was something I really wanted to do and focus on, I was fortunate to get on the Spartan Pro team this year. And so I was excited with that, just being my second year of racing, to be a part of that and just a part of the group. It's a great bunch of people and we share training ideas and stay together at races, and most of them are a hoot as well. So that's been really fun, just to meet and form some close friendships with the other Spartan Pro team members. And so that was great for me, you know, because I'd only been in it, you know, one season prior to getting on the team. And along with that, being able then to get some sponsors, which has been super.
Wow. So Heather, besides grip strength, because I know that's the hardest thing almost to, you know, really get over from going to one sport to the other, and especially OCR, what has been the hardest transition for you going from that and then also programming for your athletes?
Well, I think the biggest difference besides the grip and the obstacles is just how you train for running. So training for an Ironman, obviously you still did tempo workouts and your speed workouts, but majority of it was a little bit more steady state running, where in obstacle training, you know, you're going all out, you hit an obstacle, your heart rate goes anaerobic, heart rate wants to come back down, you're running again, heart rate anaerobic. And so training that way was definitely different, adding in more explosiveness, some plyometrics, that kind of thing. And it's been fun though, because it's different training, and then being able to take what I'm doing and program it for my OCR athletes, for my triathletes that are becoming OCR athletes.
So since you invoked the terms aerobic and anaerobic, I guess I got to ask, right? do you have your athletes using heart rate?
Yes. So most triathletes, I actually have to get them less glued to their devices because they're so stuck on their, you know, GPS and their power meters and their heart rate and, you know, how long is recovery, you know, and sometimes it's just like, don't even take your watch and just go run. And then for somebody not coming from that kind of background, you have to educate them on, you know, let's do a heart rate test. Let's find out what your zones are. Let's find out what your max is. Let's, you know, so they have an idea. Sometimes people don't know how to push themselves hard enough. And then you also get those athletes that push themselves too hard every day. So when you tell them to do an easy aerobic run, they're still, oh, I got to go out there and hammer, instead of making sure they're in the right heart rate zone, that they're actually going easy enough that they can recover. And I know you are a huge believer in like running form and, you know, testing athletes, which is amazing because that's so important. You know, if I have an athlete whose cadence is, you know, in the low 80s, it's like, okay, we just need to focus on that and your form before we're even worried about all these other things.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm with you on that. And I get that question a lot because sometimes people feel like I'm asking too much of them in one sitting. You know, they're trying to get their cadence organized. They're trying to keep their heart rate organized. They're looking at their posture because, you know, I'm a geek when it comes to this kind of thing. So they start to complain that, oh, man, I'm going to lose it. You know, they just start getting completely whacked. So finally I'll tell them, look, just let's get the cadence thing worked out. Let's get the running mechanics organized, and then we'll start focusing on heart rate response. And they're like, oh, really? Oh, God, thank you so much, you know, because it's tough. But
well, and I really think you're known. I mean, I'm new to the sport, and I knew who you were right away because I obviously do research and read up on people and stuff, but I was impressed by you right away because that is so important. And not only just for people that want to get good at it, but for people that want longevity in the sport and they don't want to get injured, that proper running mechanics is huge.
Yeah, well, I'm flattered. Thank you. Yeah, but, you know, I guess if you're around long enough, people find out who you are. I've just been around a long time, you know, a long time. I started testing athletes, doing clinical assessments on athletes, I think in 1994, something like that. I bought my first metabolic cart back by $40,000, I think I invested in clinical diagnostics, and I didn't even know what I was doing with it. So it's kind of all evolved from there. But I've been doing exclusively work with OCR athletes over the last, 2.5 years now. I don't even know how long ago it's been now. And my first client in OCR was Hunter.
Okay.
Yeah, Hunter reached out to me and said, look, dude, this little guy that looks kind of like a chicken nugget with legs is beating me to death at the World Championships. And that was Hobie, right? And he was trying to figure out what he needed to do to beat this guy. And so we got together, and I've been working with him ever since. Still having trouble trying to figure out a way to beat Hobie.
Hobie's amazing.
Yeah, he really
and I
is.
Love the fact being a you know, almost closer to the 50 year mark. So I think one reason that Hobie does so amazingly well is I think he's one of the few guys that doesn't overtrain, that doesn't overdo it. I think the tendency is to just do more and more and more when we want better. Better athletes. And I'm back in my class. I had a spout where I overtrained and had fatigue and kind of tanked myself for a while. But I think he's just a little better about it than some of the other guys. I think that's why he's so unbeatable.
I think he's a Martian. I don't think he's from this planet. I mean, I might be wrong
about
that.
Is it, I mean, he's very good with choosing his races. I mean, in terms of periodization, you guys touched on it, especially you, Rich, with the person that does 17 races in, you know, 5 months. But, I mean, he's focused on that NBC series, and he's focused on Tahoe, and, you know, it's showing. So,
yeah, you got to pick your battles. And I think some people just feel like they need to fight. And it's just too often, and they're not prepared. And a lot of times they go into these events half injured, and it's just a hellbound train, you know? And then they get really frustrated with the fact they're not performing, and they're just not giving themselves an opportunity to get in a position where they can perform.
And
I could name names, but I won't.
Yeah, we won't call them out. So, but it's easy to do when you're not performing where you think you can to go train more than. And that's just a natural instinct of somebody that's highly motivated and highly competitive.
Yeah, the solution seems to always be, I'm not doing enough to perform at the level I need to perform at. So I need to do more. I need to work harder. And harder is not always smarter. And I think that this is the advantage that we have when we're able to do diagnostics on people. And we show them essentially how their body's responding to the efforts that they're putting forward and what they might want to do to improve upon those performances if they give themselves an opportunity. And I've said it a million times, and I don't want to take the floor here, but perception, I think, a lot of times is the enemy. What you perceive to be true many times is very incorrect. And so your efforts, you've trained yourself to become comfortable with the level of exertion you put out, and a lot of times it could be incorrect. And you have to come to the reality point where you realize that you're doing too much too soon, and it's all about hiring a coach like you, Heather, right?
Yeah, or yourself.
Or listen to Sean, for that matter.
Yeah.
No, that's good. So Heather, I mean, we obviously touch on it, but is there anything that you do specific to recovery to kind of avoid that burnout and maintain the high performance that you've had this year?
Yeah, I do a lot of recovery, especially being older. I think it's even more important, but I also think because I did it in my 20s and 30s, I'm still able to do what I'm doing and enjoy it. And I've done a lot of pounding on my body, you know, 36 Ironmans, 40 some half Ironmans. So I've really beaten my body up. And so I love stretching. People ask about yoga. I say yoga is great. I just do it at home because I have a family and kids. And so it's much easier to fit in. I do a lot of ice therapy. When things are, you know, I'm feeling something, I'll go in right away and get dry needling, getting stim, getting laser, you know, trying to just take care of myself. And then I think diet is a huge part, you know, making sure 30 minutes after that, you know, workout that you're getting your recovery fuel with your amino acids, and just making sure you eat well and take care of yourself is important too. I think some people that are new to sport think, oh, I just did a 2-hour run, I'm going to have the biggest hamburger and fries and 7 beers. And, you know, then they do that the next day and it kind of, you know, negates itself. And so trying to have people eat clean diets, of course, you're going to have times where it's your birthday and you're going to have cake and you're going to have days where you splurge. But when it becomes an everyday thing because you worked out, it's not helping people as much as they might think.
Heather, you did, I saw that you did Wildflower.
I did. I won Wildflower back in, 2003 or 2004. That is one of my favorite triathlons.
I did Wildflower in 1988. I've got pictures of me in a Speedo to prove it.
Yes, the triathlon attire has definitely changed. Even since I started racing, we raced in a swimsuit. You know, now there's all these, you know, fancy tri suits and your aero everything.
Yeah.
And, you know, it is funny, you know, especially back in your day looking at the pictures.
It's crazy. I have a video. By the way, if you go to my YouTube channel, I have a video of my race. I used to own the Maui Triathlon. We did a race, and it was... it actually went to the Cannes Film Festival, the film. But we did a coverage of my race in 1983. And you just got to look at what guys were wearing back then. This is before hard shell helmets. We were racing with leather bonnets. Remember those?
Yeah.
Do you remember that? There's like a... And you look at the video, you look at Scott Molina wearing wool socks. You know, I guess back then we called them gym socks, right? They were wool socks, wool cycling shorts, right? And all the wires, you know, your brake cables and everything just sticking out everywhere. And toe clips, right? And the aid stations had D-Fizz Coke, right? Because there was no sport drinks back then either.
One thing I love is, like, looking back, though, at how fast the guys were on what they ate and what they wore. And now with all these, you know, $12,000 bikes and disc wheels and aero helmets, you know, they're still not beating their times.
I know.
In Hawaii.
It's crazy.
Which is pretty amazing, yeah.
Yep. It is crazy. Yeah. It's nuts. And so I just found it interesting that, you know, here you are in a master's age category, departed from a really tough sport, and you found yourself another tough sport to play in.
I just love it. You know, and I think I loved the atmosphere. So triathlon was very serious. I mean, part of that probably was because I was racing professionally and you were relying on prize money and sponsorship money. And so there was much more, you know, basically when you went to race, if you didn't have a good day, it was, you know, how you were making your living. But the OCR community is so friendly. And, you know, you go there and they're playing hard rock. And, you know, I just love, like, what people are wearing and just the whole attitude. And, you know, I've gone back out on the course when I'm done in the elite wave and just helping each other through the obstacles. And, just the whole vibe of OCR. I just fell in love with that. And then the challenge of it, because it was different. And it's just a super fun sport. And I see OCR right now is where Ironman was, you know, 10, 15 years ago when I was into the sport. And so I see how OCR is growing. When I started triathlon, you know, it was not an Olympic sport. And several years later, it became an Olympic sport. And so I see that that's where, you know, they're trying to get OCR to go. And there's a lot of similarities of OCR to where I was in triathlon 15 years ago.
I absolutely agree with you. I've made that point several times in various conversations with people where, I mean, I'll share with you, I literally sat in a hotel suite with the producers for CBS Sports, and we were discussing the potential for triathlon to make it to the Olympics. And they were telling me, no, it's going to take forever. It's going to, and they just kept on and on about how that's just not on the radar. It's not going to happen. And here we are producing an event for television, just like the, you know, the media attention for an event like that back then was monstrous, where now OCR is on, what, 3-4 different broadcast channels. And the, I mean, just having an event that's covered 6 times in a season is unheard of. I mean, that's like baseball almost. So just the exposure that it's getting is going to cause some very entertaining things to happen, I think. And I think what's going to end up happening, if I got my crystal ball out, is the money in the sport for the athletes is going to get nutty. It's going to get to a place where people are going to be making a decent living in the sport. And I think it's going to probably take about 5 years, unfortunately for us, right?
Yeah, well, I'll only be like 54 by then. I'll still be racing. We were joking, if OCR got into the Olympics, I'm like, wow, I'll still be racing. So, but yeah, no, I totally agree with you. And it's really exciting to see it and be part of it and see, you know, where it's going to go.
Well, honestly, I don't care if it gets to the Olympics. I don't think that's even what needs to happen for the sport. I think that the sport will probably do better if they just keep doing what they're doing and have these series and have these, you know, where the media shows up at these events and covers competition, gets color and coverage on the athletes and who they are and what they're going through and how competitive they are, and get more and more people interested in watching the sport, and then there's going to be more and more money involved in it. But what I fear with the Olympics is they're going to try to tailor the event to fit into their box, and that's going to change the complexion of the competition in the sport. It's already starting to happen with the Tough Mudder X, you know, bringing it down to kind of a 1 mile event. It's kind of a stadium style event, and I don't want to see the sport go away from the mountains and, you know, the whole environment thing. You know, I don't want it to be manufactured or prefab, if you know what I'm talking about.
Oh, I totally agree. I did the Spartan Ultimate Team Challenge TV show, and my friends or family that watch are like, okay, so now when you go race, when I talk about my Spartan Pro teammates, they're like, okay, so you guys work together on these obstacles. I'm like, no. Like, so the TV show kind of gave people this idea that we do this together and we have 4 people and we lift a car. And I'm like, no, the TV show's not exactly what we do. And so I try to explain that, oh, it's like 12 miles and you're trails and off trails and through the mud, you know, and so that Ultimate Challenge was really fun and it was great exposure. But again, it was very different from what we really do. And I agree that Tough Mudder X, you know, again, amazing, but very different from what we're really doing. And so it'll be interesting because each year it seems like there's a couple new things. Even at the CrossFit Games this year, they had an obstacle course.
Right. Well, I don't have any problem with the Tough Mudder X. I think the format's exciting. What I do like about it, at least they're covering it as a competition as opposed to a reality show kind of a format. And I think there's room for that. But I just don't want to see, like, the Olympics would cause it to be more corralled. And you're talking about, I think just for the sake of the way they cover it, they want to turn it into a much shorter event. And I don't know, I just, something about 14 miles up and down a mountain, dealing with frigid water, walls, just the environment at large. I think that's kind of what is exciting about the sport to me. But I mean, I'm sure other people have different opinions about it and they're entitled, but they could be wrong if they have to be. But
even with triathlon, when they made it for the Olympics, they wanted it to be spectator friendly. So in came, you know, the idea of draft legal racing and shorter, you know, racing. And so it did make the sport different, even though it did make it probably better for television, better for the viewers. It did change the sport.
Yeah, yeah. When CBS came to me to cover my event, we did a site survey. I'll never forget it. We're in a Jeep, and I'm kind of taking them through the course, and they're looking at it, and they said, you know what the problem here is? Nobody's going to die. They said you did a really amazing job making sure that it's going to be a safe and competitive event, but where's the drama? There's no chance that somebody's going to die on your course. And then we moved to Kauai to do the event because the swim was so treacherous. I mean, and Hanalei, have you ever swum Hanalei Bay?
No, I have not.
Hanalei Bay is a nightmare. It's like, it was a 1.6-mile swim. And when the outside waves are breaking, they're over 20 feet. And the inside set, well, there's three sets. So there's 20, 10, and 6. So the inside sets you go through were breaking at 6 feet, just continuously breaking at 6 feet. There was a river, the only river in Hawaii, that dumps into the bay. So you have an eddy. It's like a current that's coming at you that's trying to sweep you out to sea. It was a nightmare. And they thought, yeah, now we got something here because this is, you know, we're going to drown somebody here for sure. This is going to be amazing. And that's what they were looking for. And I don't know. It's just, I don't know. I'm off on a rant. But
did they succeed?
Yeah, we did the event and it was, I mean, well, first of all, they said, what do you think, Richard? Can somebody swim this? And I thought,
I think he wanted to know if somebody drowned.
Well, we, you know, we're doing a site survey and they said, so what do you think, Richard? Can somebody swim this? And I said, I don't know. I don't know. They said, well, do it. And so I don't know if you remember a guy named Mark Montgomery. Mark was a pro triathlete back in the day. And so Mark and I went out, jumped in the water and swam the thing. And it was like Amityville. It was the scariest thing I ever did because you were getting tossed around and the current was taking you out. You take 5 strokes, you look and you're like five strokes back from where you started. It was a nightmare. But yeah, they pulled it off. You know, it was a good event. So for whatever it's worth. But anyway, let's get back. Let's back to OCR for a moment. I got onto this historic rant. You going to West Virginia?
I am going to West Virginia. I am not racing, but I will be there.
Who do you like in the women's field?
I really think Rhea's going to surprise some people. I mean, she's been surprising people all year, but she is. The longer she goes, the better she gets. And so since this is a longer event, I would put a bet on her. Nicole has surprised some people this year. I think she'll be back on top. She's been practicing her double sandbag and, you know, going to kind of make some improvements to where she had a few struggles at the last race. So, and it's exciting, especially, you know, there's some new faces in the women's field that have been in that top five every single race.
Yeah. I spoke to Nicole.
For the men.
Yeah, well, you know that's good. Somebody said somebody said Hobie's not coming.
Well, I know the NBC is mandatory that you're there. So unless it's mandatory that you're there, but that doesn't mean race. I would think he would show up.
I thought it was there was a number of events that you needed to attend.
It's 4 of the 5, right?
Yeah, it's 4 out of 5, but they also say it's mandatory that you're at West Virginia. And reason being is because they want to do the award ceremony there. And so
last year what happened was, you know, people had maybe easily won the series and then they didn't come to the last race, and they want everyone to be there that's on the podium so they can do the awards. And so it says you need to be there, but it doesn't say you need to race. So he may have inquired and found out that he just needs to be there, but he doesn't have to race. But if he does race, I would definitely say he has a very good chance. I think Robert Killian will be way up there. He had a really, really busy July between Broken Skull Challenge and lots of racing. I think he's had a little bit of downtime to be with his family and recover and train, and I expect to see him, you know, right up there as well.
I don't know who, well, obviously Atkins, you know, in the absence of Hobie, would have a pretty good shot at that race, assuming he's racing it. I think he's racing it. But I don't know. I think I'm with you, though. I think Nicole's got a pretty good shot. Alyssa Holly's been showing up pretty well. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. It's fun. Like, it's fun to watch because it's exciting. And I think it's one person not completely running away with it. The women's field last time, you didn't know who was going to win until the very end because Lindsay Webster missed her steer and she got her hair caught in the barbed wire.
Oh my God, yeah.
You didn't know who was going to win until they came out of the woods and you're like, oh my gosh, you made up a lot of time. And I think that is great for the sport because it is exciting to watch, at least for me. You know, I think people that are really into it, it's exciting to watch. And, you know, not having one person on the women's side that's completely running away with it, I think also makes it more exciting.
I think Faye Stenning is long overdue. I think she has the potential to pull it out. And I think that it'll probably come down to Lindsay, Faye, and probably Nicole, and Alyssa somewhere close in that mix is where I kind of see things. And
okay,
I left out.
Don't put Rhea in there.
Well, I was just going to say, it sounded like I left her out, but I don't know Rhea well enough to say, other than, you know, having seen her performance. I don't know her. I know the other girls, and I guess that's kind of why they stick in my.
Well, in Hawaii, she beat all the women and all the men.
Yeah.
And that was impressive.
So beating all the men, you know, that's really impressive. So,
yeah.
It's going to be fun to watch. And likewise for Tahoe, you know, what other women show up, you know, from, you know, different countries, and how does that shake up the mix of it?
I had a conversation with Nicole on the phone a few days ago discussing some things that she might want to work on. But I like Nicole a lot. She really surprised me at Monterey. She just really, really surprised me. I didn't expect her to be that strong in the carries. And she was just running away from those girls in the carries. I knew she had leg speed, but just amazing strength relative to her weight. She was just really did a great job there. So
yeah, she's an amazing athlete.
She lives close to you, doesn't she? Aren't you guys?
She does. She's in Boulder, so we're about 3 hours away. But not, you know, not like, hey, let's go for a jog in the morning. So especially with, you know, she's got a busy schedule. I got a busy schedule with all my athletes. So if it was a little bit closer.
How many athletes are you coaching?
Each way is kind of long. I have a triathlon team here in Steamboat, and then I do a lot of online coaching, and I have my OCR athletes, and then I have just everyday athletes that, you know, want to lose weight. I tend to get a lot of people pretty much about October that are like, hey, can you make me really strong in 2 months because I want to, you know, ski. And so it's fun because I have a big variety. I'll have athletes that are with me for 2 months just before ski season. I have athletes that have been with me for 5-6 years. You know, a lot of them, you know, are athletes I coach, but they become my friends, which is really, you know, the nice side of, as you know, because you've been coaching for so long as well. You build those relationships with your athletes. One thing when I'm talking to a potential athlete about, you know, signing up, it's like, you know, we got to be able to communicate. And so, that's probably my favorite part of coaching.
Do you find it hard to balance that going with being a Spartan Pro Team member and then obviously your duties as a mother?
I would have my kids still been little, so I'm really fortunate. My kids are, my oldest are 20 and my youngest is 17. And so okay. he's got his license and he's, you know, goes to work in the morning. Today he had to go, he left the house at 6:45 when I left, and he had to go to school and register, and then he went to work, and then he goes to cross country, and, you know, typically we're all together for dinner, which is fabulous. It's my favorite time of the day, and we sit outside on the patio and have dinner and joke around. But those motherly duties that were a lot harder when I was training for triathlon and trying to be mom have gotten a lot easier now that they're older and they drive. So it does give me flexibility to leave the house at 6 o'clock and coach a swimming session, and they're all fine. They know how to make their own breakfast and everything. Or not make their breakfast. They just leave.
Heather, do you coach any of the pros?
I do not. No, I don't have. I did for a while, but I don't at the current moment.
Okay. Just curious. And I'm talking about OCR.
No. Nope.
Okay. And how big is your triathlon team?
I think we have about 16 here in Steamboat.
Wow. It's a pretty good size.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. And are they racing elite, or are they just racing?
Most of them are top age groupers. So I have a couple that went to the national championship this last weekend, and, you know, they'll qualify in their age group for the world championship. So they're very good athletes, but they're not racing at the pro level.
I heard you say that you were tied to a bike shop. What's going on with the bike shop? Is that your shop, or are you working there? What are you doing?
Oh, I use, I don't know if you've ever heard of a CompuTrainer.
Yep.
So a CompuTrainer measures your efficiency of your pedal stroke.
Yeah, I used to own one.
And, yeah, they're a great tool for people that want to improve on their technique.
Yeah, the RacerMate company went out of business. These are the people that produce the CompuTrainer.
Okay.
I used to use a CompuTrainer in my lab for, I'm also a bike fitter, and I don't tell people that very often because I don't like bike fitting. I realize how important it is, and obviously for cycling and triathlon, it's absolutely critical to have a good bike fit, and that's what kind of got me into it, because I wouldn't even do a VO2 on a cyclist or a triathlete unless I've fitted them on the bike first. Because if you're on the bike wrong, then your heart rate responses are all going to be jacked up anyway. But I used to use a CompuTrainer, and I didn't like it because it was all hardwired, as you're familiar. There's like wires everywhere. And I was waiting for the day that they get the stupid thing to be on Bluetooth, so the setup would be a lot easier. I'm assuming that in your case, it's already fixed. You just kind of go in there, throw your bike on, and it's ready to go, right?
Yeah, they don't have those wires anymore. They have a pod that goes on the floor that measures your efficiency instead of having to put that magnet on the pedal. And so it has improved over the years. But,
oh, good. Well, that's good news. Do you just use the trainer with your athletes there, or you do other work with them?
No, just the CompuTrainer.
Okay, cool. Well, I think we've kicked this can down the road as best we can. So let's get some closing comments here.
So Heather, here's a question for you, and I know it's been talked about quite a bit in OCR. What are your thoughts of the Ultra Beast in Iceland?
I think that would be amazing. And I actually looked at it. I'm like, I have not done an Ultra Beast, but that is definitely on the bucket list. But then I thought, well, if I'm going to go to Iceland, I want to be able to go in the summer where I can see everything, because I believe in the winter, in December, there's only a couple hours of daylight. Is that correct?
So it's funny you say that, because my mom and my dad, or my aunt, my sister and my dad went in December, and I think they might have had 4 or 5 hours of sunlight the whole day. So yes, that's correct.
Yeah. So if I was going to go, I think I'd want to go in the summer where I could go on like long, amazing hikes and stuff.
I think the interesting question is whether it's actually going to happen.
Good point.
I just think that the complexity of the travel is, it's going to be tough. It's going to be an expensive venture, I think, for Spartan to pull it off, because you know, clearly the reason why they have so many events in a given day is to pay for what it costs to produce these events and to go all the way to Iceland. What does it cost to fly to Iceland? I'm just, you know, curious. What it's like, you got to like ride a caribou to get to the hotel, or what are you going to do? It's a long way off, man.
Yeah. I mean, I could tell you just from my sister and my dad, they live in New York, so they actually got a direct flight there. But I mean, you're thinking, you know, all 50 states, I mean, a bunch of layovers and things like that. I'm sure the cost needs to be, in terms of round trip, probably between $600 and $1,000.
Well, aside, well, look, it cost me $600 to go to Vermont from California round trip.
Yeah, so it varies, but it's going to be high.
Yeah, and well, I'd imagine that it's not going to be just getting to the location. I don't know. It just sounds logistically like it'd be tough. I don't know. Sounds like it'd be tough, but then I don't know. Do you know anything about it, Heather? Have you heard anything about the cost? And
I don't. I don't know what the cost is. I would imagine, yeah, it's expensive, and you know, hopefully they can pull it off, because I'm sure, you know, if it goes off well, people would definitely save up and make it a true destination race.
Well, I know a couple of guys are planning on going. Miguel Medina told me he wants to go, and him and Mark Jones are talking about doing something together. And I don't know whether I just let the cat out of the bag, but I know they were talking about it. I don't know. It sounds amazing. It just, I don't know, just a long ways off. But anyway, Heather, one day we're going to get a chance to meet each other, and I'm looking forward to that. And I love what you're doing. You know, you're out there causing these elite athletes to pay attention to a master, and what a career you've had so far.
Well, thank you very, very much, and look forward to meeting you too.
Well, if you get out this way, we're doing a clinic here in September, and then we're going to do another one in San Francisco. Then I'm shutting it down for the year. And we're talking about doing something, Yancey and I, out here next year. Hopefully do something kind of big. I'd like to do like about a three-day thing where we just go nuts, you know, just do a lot of education and training for about 3 days. And hopefully, like Malibu, we've talked about having the thing go off at Pepperdine University, because it's just a cool venue there, and we've looked into it before, and we can get access where people could stay in the dorms for really, really cheap, and, you know, three meals and everything for like $100.
Oh, that would be amazing.
Yeah, and it's close, and, you know, it's in Malibu. I'd probably get Hunter to show up for it. You know, he's always fun to play with.
Cool.
Anyway, thank you so much, and let's get your contact information for your coaching.
Yeah, super. Thank you guys both. So coaching, you just go to heathergolnick.com. That's my website. And my coaching company is called Iron Edge Coaching. And I thought about, when I started doing OCR athletes, if I needed to change that. And I was like, no, Iron Edge, you know, fits still with OCR athletes. And if anyone wants to, you can check me out on Instagram at @athleteheathergolnick.
Very cool. Sean, any parting statements?
No, thanks. Thanks for coming on, Heather. It's been a pleasure to talk to you, get to learn more about the Ironman triathlon and how you're just dominating the OCR scene. So thanks for being on.
Well, thanks for suggesting me. I appreciate it.
Very cool. Have a great day.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Well, friends, it's time to bring another show to a close. Be sure and tune in to us next week. We've got a lot of great content in store for you. I want you to tell your friends to check us out. You can always find us on Facebook. Simply go search the Natural Running Network. Drop us a message. I'd love to learn more about you and the things you do. And until then, you have an amazing day.